This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
It is indeed an honor to welcome live into this studio the one, the only, Ernie Earn of the University of Virginia, Chancellor of the University's College at Wise, former Dean of Admissions, Dean of Students, Professor of Geology. What haven't you done? It's a long list of decades of years of service to UVA and to Charlottesville, and it's a sincere thrill for me to have you here. Thank you for being here.
Well, Coy, you know, all that one has to do is step outside and experience Charlottesville. One understands why one makes this their home.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start at the beginning. Where are you from? And give us a quick background before you came to Charlottesville in the 1960s.
Ever so briefly, I'm a New Jersey kid who went to college in Maine at Bates, had the good fortune to find a very, very attractive Bates co-ed, and it got to the stage where, that is my wife of 53 years now.
Wow, congratulations.
So there I was at Bates College, not really knowing what my future would hold, but my roommate was taking a course in geology, and I spent more time reading the text than he did. And the next thing you know, I was a geology major, and from Bates off to graduate school at Lehigh, and then gainful employment occurred. My first teaching job was at Marshall University over in Huntington, 3 years there. And then an offer came from the University of Virginia in 1962. We thought, a wonderful place, but in due time we'll work our way north up to a small liberal arts college in New England. But that was 47 years ago. So we do not have that in our horoscope of planned events for the future.
Yeah. We're talking with Ernie Earn of the University of Virginia. So, Ernie, go back with us. And what was it about those geology textbooks that captivated you early on? Do you remember? What was it that just grabbed your attention?
Well, like so much in life, it turned out to be the chairman of the Department of Geology at Bates, a Princeton grad, a Canadian, an individual who had worked the metals market in the Canadian minefields, not minefields, but mines.
Right.
And
right.
And he set the hook and he set it deep. And, that's where it all happened.
Yeah. So you come to you and your bride come down here to Charlottesville, 1962, as an assistant professor of geology.
There it was. We were in Brooks Hall, the only Victorian building on the university grounds. Of note was the fact that that year, 1962, was the year that the University of Virginia's total enrollment finally reached 5,000. 5,000
wow.
Students. And it didn't take long for one to see that the future was going to entail growth. The future at some point was going to entail coeducation, because at the time we had a coordinate school in Fredericksburg, Mary Washington College of the University of Virginia.
Right, right.
We had branches all over the state, George Mason being a two-year branch, Patrick Henry, a two-year branch, eventually incorporated into the community college system. Clinch Valley College, which has become the University of Virginia's college at Wise. So we had eight or nine branches, and now we only have one, and that being the institution, the college at Wise.
Tell me what your thoughts were when y'all first got down here. I mean, you were, educated in New England, raised in the North, and you come down to the South, to Charlottesville. A very different type of place for you, I would imagine.
Yes and no. Charlottesville, as most folks will agree, is a cosmopolitan community. Of particular note, as I reflect back on our arrival here, heading north up to Washington, from Charlottesville, there were three traffic lights between Barracks Road and Route 50, Fairfax County.
Oh, my gosh.
Three traffic lights. It was a two-lane road, and it was really quite exciting with a two-lane road heading north and south. When one got to the point where one considered going out for dinner, there were three major choices in town. Maybe four. We can stretch it to four. The Thomas Jefferson Inn, which is where the Federal Executive Institute currently
right.
is.
Right there on Emmett Street.
That's correct. The Blair House, right in front of what is now Best Buy, the Monticello Hotel downtown, and the fourth would have been Gus's Steakhouse on 250 West, where the University Police Department now resides.
So that was fine dining in the early 60s.
That was fine dining.
What were the students like when you got your first classes and you started teaching? I'm curious what your reaction was to the students at Virginia.
They loved Virginia to the point where the average student here stayed 6 or 7 years. They just liked it. They were invited back to summer session and enjoyed Charlottesville in the summertime. They wore coats and ties because virtually all of them were male. We did not co-educate until 1970, but they were bright. A good third of them were from prep school, so they had been well prepared, and that is the nucleus of one of the most vocal, supportive alumni groups that any institution could hopefully have. That group, through the late 50s, through the 70s. Co-education. I had, in 1967, become the Dean of Admissions, Edgar Shannon being president at the time. And bear in mind that Edgar was only the fourth president of the University of Virginia, the institution having been founded in 1819. But the point being, the big guy, Mr. Jefferson, he did not believe in administration. He did not believe in grades. He did not believe in degrees. He acquiesced on a few of those points, but it wasn't until 1904 that the university had its first president.
Yeah, I was just reading, actually yesterday, Gary Wills' book on the founding of the university, and it's interesting that tension goes back to the 1820s, that the board actually, when Jefferson was rector, when he was still alive, they tried to convince him, hey, we need a president. You should think about this and have a president in there to help them, and this would be good. And he's like, absolutely not. I'm not going to do it.
One of the very unique aspects, and you know, we all think in higher education that we are more unique than most others, but I honestly believe that the University of Virginia does have some facets to its culture, to its overall makeup, that make it distinctive. The faculty at the university have really run the place from the outset, because a member of the faculty from the beginning was appointed to be responsible for the affairs of the institution year after year, and that continued until, as I mentioned, 1904, when the very first president, Mr. Alderman, was appointed to that post, John Castine being the seventh president
right.
of the university.
But the result of which is to set a tone that Jefferson intended, that faculty, you're not just here to teach your classes. You're here to take an active role in this community and provide some real leadership and direction and vision for the university.
Both in and out of the classroom, both with regard or in regard to their productive research, but also in working with students and being part of a student's development. And that has been one of the hallmarks of the institution, along with student self-governance.
Right, right.
Whether one talks about the university union planning for cultural and social, and you can go add ad infinitum, the various events they're responsible for. But you take the union, the Judiciary Committee, certainly the Honor Committee, they are in charge.
We're talking with Professor Ernie Earn of the University of Virginia. He's Chancellor of the University's College at Wise, former Dean of Students, and the former Dean of Admissions, which you were just talking about. That was 1967 when you took that position. Do you remember when somebody came to you and asked you about it?
The somebody was Edgar Shannon, who invited me over on a Saturday morning to have a conversation. And
did you know why you were going? Any
ideas?
I
did not. No, I did not. And I walked into his office, which was in Pavilion 8 at that particular point in time, and I found that the senior administration, small at that time in the university's history, and members of the Board of Visitors were there, and they came right out and said, we want you to be our next dean of admissions. So it was not a decision I made on the spot. I certainly had some talking to do, but one thing I made clear was that I was unwilling to give up my teaching. So from the outset, I taught for 38 consecutive years in what originally had been the five-member Department of Geology and now is the 40-plus faculty assemblage in the Department of Environmental Sciences.
Wow. So the Dean of Admissions now, and you kept teaching. That's amazing that you would.
Well, it was a reduced teaching load, but still in all, that's why I
still one of the busiest guys on grounds, I'm sure. That really is amazing.
Well, you get more done. Yeah, I wouldn't have said so at the time, but now, upon reflection, I could say so.
Now, when you took the position now of Dean of Admissions, we're talking with Professor Ernie Earn of the University of Virginia. This is back in 1967. You could see the writing on the wall at the time that coeducation was likely inevitable at some point.
We talked about it, and that was one of the appealing aspects of accepting the job. And the decision had not been made at that point by the Board of Visitors, but it was clear that when that time approached, it was a case of saying that, all right, we are going to go into the coeducational mode. Murray Washington College of the University of Virginia will go its own way and be independent of Charlottesville. And
because that at the time was the women's college, right?
That's correct. It was a coordinate school with a committee of the Board of Visitors oversaw the affairs of Murray Washington College. And by 1970, the year that, in fact, we did coeducate, the total enrollment had grown from, as I cited earlier, from 1962, just at 5,000, we were at 10,900 in the year 1970, the year we coeducated.
So in less than a decade, the student population at the university
more than doubled. More than doubled. And 450 women were admitted to the entering class that year. There was no reduction in the number of males that were part of that entering class. And the total class that entered in 70, graduated in 1974, amounted to 2,005 students in that very first coeducational class.
So you were, as Dean of Admissions now, you were right there sitting at the table looking at these first applications come in from young women across Virginia, across the country, to go to Virginia.
And so many folks would say, and certainly I believe, that class was absolutely awesome because they had very real challenges before them. The co-eds that joined the all-male, the so-called all-male institution. We certainly had upper-class women in education and nursing, but in that entering class of that included architecture and engineering and, of course, the college, that number of that group of women were facing some very, very real challenges, both in as well as outside the classroom.
Yeah. And could you see that? I mean, as a professor, as the dean walking the grounds, you could really see that, I would imagine, the challenges that they face.
Well, the challenges they face, but what was clear was that while it took 3 and perhaps 4 years, by the end of that fourth year, the 1974 year, that women held most of the leadership positions. they did. And and it really took 10 years for the university to reach parity. By 1980, the entering class was 50-50. That very first class, there were 22% women.
Interesting. Wow. Now, we're talking with Professor Ernie Earn of the University of Virginia. He was dean of admissions from 1967 to 1973 and helped to one of the leaders in creating coeducation at the University of Virginia. Ernie, for decades, the argument had been, well, you know, if you let women into the college, the honor system will crumble and grades will plummet. And I guess you could argue that we saw the opposite of both. We saw a reinvigoration and a recommitment to the honor system.
On both of those
and grades went through
matters
the roof.
That yeah. you cited. The difficulty, and it was an awkward situation for the co-eds that first and perhaps for part of the second year of their residence, the word on the street was, you dated you chicks during the week and you rolled on the weekend. Rolling was part of the game. But after that...
rolling on down the road, yeah,
rolling
to one of the women's
road,
colleges.
And
yeah.
just, you know, they came to their senses. The males came to their senses by looking around. We had not only a talented group of women intellectually, but they were one good-looking bunch, you know?
We're talking with Professor Ernie Earn, honored to have him live in studio. We're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour for local news and weather and continue this conversation on the other side. This is Charlottesville right now. He came to Charlottesville in 1962 as an assistant professor of geology. He went on to become the dean of admissions, dean of students for a time at some point, right?
Or am I? Vice president of student affairs.
Vice president of student affairs. He was for a time, came out of retirement to serve as chancellor of the university's college at Wise. Professor Ernie Earn is live in studio, and it's a great thrill and an honor to have him here. Let me ask you to talk a little bit about, as you look back over the last few decades in Charlottesville, and especially at the university, what's changed and what hasn't changed, if that's the right way to put that question?
It is, because we've had both in spades. And let me begin, perhaps, by referencing an experience my wife and I, Petey and I, had at a conference. We were in Charleston, South Carolina, and the president of the College of Charleston was welcoming, as is the obligatory aspect of that position. He was welcoming a conference of which I was a part, and he stopped in mid-sentence and looked over, and I have known him for a while, and he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I should tell you, I have a daughter at the University of Virginia." He paused, and then he said, "You know, students at the University of Virginia just don't get over it, do they?" So what that said to me and what it said to the other academics that were in that setting is that there's a real sense of place in Charlottesville. And any time, and this might sound hokey, but any time you step into the setting of the lawn, it's almost as if you're doing it for the first time. It has a very real impact on you. Mortar and brick shouldn't have the impact that it does at the University of Virginia, but the manner in which our facilities are constructed really does.
Yeah. I will tell you, I've been here for 20 years, and the most magical time I've ever had on the lawn, I actually experienced this past weekend when I took my daughter up there, we just grabbed a book. We went up and sat on the lawn, and I read to her from a book that that we're reading together. And we were up there for a couple of hours just on the lawn, a beautiful afternoon. I will never forget that.
And I understand.
And I've been
there
for 20 years, and I just feel like I just experienced the beauty of the lawn.
Petey and I, my wife and I, lived in one of the pavilions for 12 years, and it's almost as if the big guy was going to come around the corner any moment. I'll tell you, but to be that close to the leaders in the student body really made a tremendous impact on us.
Right, right.
Alumni loyalty, I referenced earlier in our conversation. There are few places that have the loyalty that we do. We have traditions. Anytime, seemingly, if you use a paperclip, it becomes a revered object in our environment. But what I'm alluding to is that there's a time and a place and a meaning for the traditions that the student body have chosen to sustain. There's balance to what we do, both in as well as out of the classroom. The overused phrase, work hard, play hard. Well, our students do work hard, but they surely know how to play.
Right.
We have an unusual linkage with our founder, most unusual. Student self-governance was there from the beginning. It is still a part and parcel to everyday life at the institution. However, we've had many changes, not the least of which is the growth that the institution has made. Ever so quickly, 1962, 5,000 students, 1965, 7,200, 1970, 10,900, 1980, 16,900, and then it began to slow down, 1990, 17,700, 2000, 18,400, and now we're at 21 and change in terms of our enrollment. But I'll take on anyone in conversation and debate by saying the basic fabric of what we do is every bit as strong today with our 20-plus thousand students as it was when we were one-quarter the size of where we are now. State support. For years, the University of Virginia looked at approximately a third of its operating budget coming from the state. And over the course
of time... That sounds huge today.
Well, we're down to, depending on which report one reads, but the overall operating budget, we're down somewhere around 6 to 8%
wow.
of our total operating budget. And we are big time, a major research institution. And as a result, our budget is huge. Coats and Ties went out in a matter of 3 weeks in 1968. I am not exaggerating. They disappeared. The first sign was the absence of socks. So one wore their Bass Weegans, their khaki pants, their blue shirt, their rep tie, orange and blue, of course, and their blue blazer. And then the socks went, and in no time, Coats and Ties disappeared. Another major change occurred in 1985. The ABC laws changed in the state of Virginia. Social life at the university changed markedly when the drinking age went from 18 to 21. So the institution had to grapple with how does one program for members of the student body with a more restrictive age for the consumption of alcohol.
It did change. I remember as a college student at William & Mary, I arrived there in 84, they would buy you kegs for freshmen, you know, for big parties, and mm-hmm. then the next year that was gone.
Yeah.
It was just really changed, and they tried to figure out, well, how do we get people to come out for to see a band or to come to events anymore if the student union can't buy kegs?
And Coy, over the course of time, the selectivity in choosing the members of the student body had a very, very real impact on graduation rates, sky high sky high. Whether, in fact, you run very fast or can leap very tall, very high, i.e. being an athlete, our students graduate on track, on time, and we have one of the lowest attrition rates in the country.
Yeah.
We just don't lose students. Talk to any student. Are you pleased with your UVA experience? Have you ever heard someone say no?
We're talking with Professor Ernie Earn of the University of Virginia. Let me ask you a little bit about what has become a very political issue. And I've heard Bob McDonnell has talked about it on this program. You got a lot of parents in Northern Virginia who are so upset they've got honor kids who can't get into Virginia. Virginia has taken increasingly a number of kids from out of state at higher tuition rates. So at the same time, you have people, folks in Richmond saying, we're going to give you less money. At the same time, they're saying, and you can't take as many out-of-state kids to try to make up for your tuition. It's like a double cut, in a way. And they're insisting that you take more kids from Virginia at a lower tuition rate.
Mm-hmm. The very first class that I was involved with in admitting to the fall of 1968 had 45% out-of-state students. 55-45 was our split. And we did not have a magical percentage that we focused on. That's simply the way it worked out. And through time, over the years, the Virginia applicants have been very self-selective of whether, in fact, they're going to potentially make the grade in Charlottesville. So there's a lot of self-selection that goes into that. At present, we're just about a third of our students are non-Virginians. It's a nice balance. Once again, it's not a fixed percentage. But in the Commonwealth of Virginia, we have 15 senior, that is, four-year institutions. We have 24 community colleges and 37 or 38 private colleges and universities. We have a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of choice in the higher educational marketplace, both publicly supported and those that are privately endowed. And so long as the institution is graduating its students on track, on time, and having the ability to attract individuals from around the country to be part of the student body, we believe firmly and sincerely that we're doing the right thing. And for the most part, the legislature is in agreement.
Yeah. Another one of the great changes that you've seen at Virginia since you arrived in 1962 is the diversity around grounds, and not just among the students, but among the faculty as well.
Coy, the very first, I'm reverting to my experience, but it was of interest to me in looking at the entering class of 1967, which I had not been involved with, but I wanted to see just basically what it had been throughout the 1960s. The 1967 entering class had 10 applications submitted by Afro-American students. Six were offered admission and three came. And so we made the major decision the following year that we were going to go out to what we then referred to as black churches and black community centers to take the Virginia message out and see what happened. We spent a lot of time with guidance counselors from predominantly black high schools. And by 1970, 101 members of the entering class were Afro-Americans.
Just in those short few years.
In that short period of
time. Under your leadership and your team reaching out.
It wasn't so much my leadership or our leadership. It was the fact that we had employed some of our most outstanding black undergraduates to go out and meet with counselors, with church groups, one of whom I'll cite, in fact, two of whom I'll cite, John Charles Thomas was the Chief Justice for the Virginia Supreme Court. He was one of our students that entered that class of 1970, and he was involved in, or 1968, John came in, and he was involved. Leroy Hassell, who is currently on the Virginia Supreme Court, was also one of the students who were out there taking our message, saying, believe me, they're sincere. They do want to make the University of Virginia as attractive and as diverse an institution, national institution, as possible.
There is a place for you at the university.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
And that's a wonderful message. And it happened when you were dean of admissions.
Well, it began. It began because the time was ripe. Many institutions were co-educating. Many institutions had realized that their past was not as bright. In fact, it was downright embarrassing what they had chosen to do. But at the same time, remembering that the Commonwealth of Virginia had two predominantly, in fact, exclusively black institutions at the time, Norfolk State, Virginia State. I had cited the fact that we had institutions that were predominantly for women, like Radford was the coordinate division of Virginia, what was then known as Virginia Polytechnic Institute.
Right, right.
Radford, and of course we had our own Mary Washington College. So a lot of things were gelling, and we were able to collectively and cooperatively move forward in a relatively short period of time.
I hate to present this to you, but we've only got a couple of minutes left, and I hate to ask you this question with such a limited time window we have before we have to break, but we're talking with Professor Ernie Earn of the University of Virginia. Share your thoughts about the future of the university and the 21st century UVA.
It's clear that that we're sitting on a barrel, and we're sitting on its own bottom. That is, that barrel can't be rocky. So as a result, this is why over the course of time, through the Hereford and the O'Neill, and now certainly in a very positive manner, the Castine administration, the Castine presidency, the University of Virginia, for the most part, can stand on its own. State support, as minor as it may be to some, is very, very important to us. And it provides for a very unique manner to bring the institution forward in gigantic steps, both on a research basis. Our notoriety as a first-class institution has grown. And it will continue to grow because of the students that we have enrolled, because of the renown of the faculty that we're able to not only attract but retain, and because the university has a forward-thinking motif.
Professor Ernie Earn of the University of Virginia came to Charlottesville in 1962. It's been an honor to have you here. I really appreciate it.
Coy, a good pleasure.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.